Okay, good afternoon. We are going to resume our budget parade here with the next up being the Water Bureau. So, Michael, just take it away with your team. Make your presentation. The budget office will respond, and then we'll talk. Welcome. You're on.
So I understand we're going to wrestle the slides a little bit, but you've all got paper copies, so we'll just carry on. Okay. So, good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, City Auditor, members of the Budget Committee. My name is Mike Stewart. I'm the Director of the Portland Water Bureau, and I'm happy to report this is my 212th day on the job. I'm not sure that lets me say I'm still the new guy. I must be getting out of new guy category soon. I have a bunch of people to introduce. Group directors from the Bureau that are here. Gabe Solmer, over there, you guys can wave your hands, is our communications director. Ty Kovach, construction and maintenance. Kathy Cook, customer service. Edward Campbell, where's he at? Back there, resource protection. I have two of our labor partners here, Mark Gibson and Rob Martineau from AFSCME. We have our partners from PUB, Mike Harrison and Kendra Smith. And partners from the Cub, Janice Thompson. Where are you, Janice? There you are. And hopefully I haven't left anybody out. Leave somebody out? No. So that is our group, my cheering section, I hope. We're here this afternoon to present our budget. We're following guidance given from Commissioner Fish that basically said that the combined utility rate increase had to be 5% or less. And we have happily met that goal. Our budget builds on our past years. As most of you know, we have been working on a very large construction program, mostly driven by federal regulation, and we are continuing that, and that has a lot to do with the numbers being the size that they are. Our budget is fiscally responsible. We're very well known in our industry. A good measure of that is our AAA bond rating. More on that a little bit later. It ensures our regulatory compliance, very important for a public health enterprise. We are a very large public health enterprise and we are highly regulated. It will be sure that we provide safe drinking water to the public and that we will do that 24/7, 365 days a year. Next slide. This would be slide number 2 in the stack. Our assets are growing. The system is becoming more complex. We went this past year from $7.6 billion in assets to about $8.2 billion in assets. So we have a lot of new facilities. These facilities have a lot of electronic controls, valves, and so on in them, and that increases the complexity. In the past couple of years, we've completed Dam 2 towers out at the watershed. We have completed the new interstate facility, Powell Butte 2, Kelly Butte, and Sandy River Crossing, putting our water supply lines underneath the Sandy River and off of a very old 1930s bridge. All of that adds to the resilience of the system. Slide number 3. There we go. First and foremost, our water has to be safe to drink. We provide it 24/7, 365 days a year. Everything we do improves our seismic resilience. In the last 15 years, we've spent about $600 million, every bit of it to an up-to-date code that will put us in much better shape should we get the subduction zone earthquake or a magnitude 6 earthquake, Portland Hills fault that we're probably sitting right on top of. We believe we use our resources wisely, our financial resources, our human resources, and the physical assets that we possess. Slide 4. Only one comment here, you've all got the handouts, is that we are one of 10 or so utilities with a AAA bond rating. We get audited every year. It's very important for us to have that bond rating because it allows us to borrow money cheaply, and it also helps out the entire city. Because of our bond rating. Slide number 5. We provide drinking water and water for many other uses. 6. We provide firefighting water supply. We respond to emergencies. We fix about 250 main breaks every year, usually within 4 hours. And we just recently approved, council has approved the Willamette River Crossing project with our little hidden ship there, you might find it. We'll be putting a line underneath the Willamette River that will be able to supply the west side of the city in a major earthquake. What are our biggest challenges? Aging infrastructure would be number one on my list of challenges. Something like 80% of our pipes are older than I am, and I'm almost 65. Regulations. We are a highly regulated entity, regulated by OHA, Oregon Health Authority, DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, and our good friends at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. These regulations drive much of our capital program. We're also, in that vein, a public health enterprise, and we have to tightly control everything we do because there's something on the order of 956,000 people that drink our water every day. Seismic risk in the region. These are heavy on my mind. All of you, or most of you, have heard me speak about this topic. We are subject to the Cascade Subduction Zone earthquake. That's the subject of the Oregon Resilience Plan. And we also sit on top of a magnitude 6 fault called the Portland Hills Fault that's underneath us. These things all weigh on our minds and are the focus of a lot of our effort. I'll turn it over now to Cecilia.
Hi, I'm Cecilia Hoon, the Finance Director for the Portland Water Bureau. Let me start with letting you know that the Water Fund is an enterprise fund. We are funded with rates and charges, and we do not receive funding from the general fund. So I'm on slide 8 here. The total requirement requested for next year of $237 million includes capital improvements, debt service, operations and maintenance of the water system, and other expenditures which are transfers to the general fund. The funding for these items are directly across in the resources bar. Capital improvements has three funding sources: bond proceeds, capital revenues, which includes system development charges, and monthly charges are our water sales revenue. So a portion of our capital program is cash funded, paid for with revenues. Debt service and operations and maintenance are always paid for with water sales revenue. Next slide, please. Water system funding sources. Two-thirds of our funding is from water sales revenue. Our plan is to issue water revenue bonds this fall, and the proceeds from that sale will provide about $65 million for our capital program next fiscal year. Next slide. Our water sales revenue, over half of our revenue is from our residential customers. That's our single-family residents and multifamily residents. We have 19 wholesale customers that provides for 11% of our wholesale revenue. Next slide. On slide 11 is our total requested budget. About a third of our requested budget next year is to operate and maintain our water system. Another third to make improvements to our water system. Our debt service is estimated at $55 million, and that includes the bond sale that we'll be issuing this fall. General fund transfers includes our utility license fee, as well as general fund overhead payments to the general fund. General fund transfers are utility license fee and general fund overhead. Next slide. This slide breaks down our O&M budget, $83 million, into our programs. About 75% or 440 of our staff supports operating and maintaining our water system. I'm going to start with the supply program. Supply program is to operate and protect our two sources of supply. That's the Bull Run and groundwater. Our treatment program, we are an unfiltered system, so we have low treatment cost. Transmission and terminal storage program is operation and maintenance of our conduits and reservoirs. Regulatory compliance is to meet federal and state regulations, and it also includes the hundreds of samples that we sample and test on a weekly basis. Customer service program includes more than just answering a customer calls, doing the billing and collection of the water that we sell. It also includes our permit folks servicing the community, development community. It also includes are security and emergency management, providing water efficiencies and sustainability services, and the ground maintenance that we do around all of our facilities. Distribution programs includes operations and maintenance of our distribution assets, and they include the pump stations, the tanks, the mains, the hydrants for fire protection. It includes valves and meters that we have throughout the city. Support program, as you see, as described on the slide, the one thing I want to mention about our support program is that it also supports our capital program. So it supports everything we do throughout the Bureau. Next slide, please. The capital improvement program. 25% or about 125 of our staff supports the capital program. Nearly half of next year's capital program will be work on the distribution assets. Again, those are replacements of our pipes, our hydrants, our valves. About half of that program is actually on pipe replacement. The Washington Park Reservoir Project is within the transmission and terminal storage program, and our plan is to expend about $31 million next fiscal year on that project. Next slide. This one shows our historical and forecasted capital improvements. Construction focused on LT2 compliance started in 2009. And the first set of spikes that you see in 2013 and 14, they includes four projects that we had worked on at the same time. It includes the Powell Butte and Kelly Butte reservoirs that we built, the Dam 2 tower in the Bull Run, and the new interstate facility that we now have. The second set of spikes that you see that's coming up in fiscal year 18 and 19, that's when we expect two of our largest projects to be under construction, and they are Washington Park Reservoir and the Willamette River Crossing Project. And our capital program, beyond what's shown on the slide there, what we would expect is that it will continue at about the same level as those last 2 years, so averaging about $80 million is what we're expecting beyond what is shown there. Next slide. What has driven our capital program? What will continue to drive our program? We have a system that's older than my boss over here. It's over 100 years old. So we need to be replacing the parts in our system. We also incorporate seismic resiliency in all of our projects, and we certainly need to continue to meet our regulatory requirements. Next slide, our five-year capital program. The two largest projects in the next 5 years are the Willamette River Crossing Project and the Washington Park Reservoir Project. We'll also be shifting over the next 5 years to our distribution assets, doing more replacements of our pipes, our hydrants, our valves, and services. Next slide. This shows our projected principal bond outstanding. What we are planning to do, of course, is to continue to issue 25-year revenue bonds to fund our portion of our capital program. We are proud of our AAA credit rating on our water revenue bonds, the highest credit rating that is available from Moody Investor Services. Our bond rates are very favorable because of that, so borrowing costs are the lowest available to us. We plan to issue bonds every year for the next 4 years, so you see that climbing, and then we'll be looking at issuing bonds every other year. See that drop in the graph. Next slide, our projected annual debt service. Certainly with each issuance of revenue bonds, our debt service each year will go up. But one thing I want to point out is the assumptions that we have used in estimating the annual debt service payments. They are very conservative. Which means that what we're projected here is likely to be higher than what our actual debt service will be when we issue bonds. Our assumption, for example, in 2017 is assumed to have a 5% bond rate and then a 6% bond rate thereafter on all the subsequent issues. Our last issue in December 2014, our actual bond rate was 3.2%.
Okay. How did you decide to go for more bonds rather than increasing the rate to pay off investments as we go?
That's a balancing that we do. Certainly one of the goal is to minimize the rates as much as we can. Otherwise, it'll cost a lot to fund a lot of the capital program. We also look at what we're paying for. Certainly any assets that goes for a very long time, like the reservoirs, we'll want to bond those and let everybody pay for them over the next 50 years. And so there is a core portion of our capital program, which is replacements of all of our distribution system assets. That's what we want to be using our current rate dollars to be paying for.
So a little bit of a reset. The slides look a little different, not so much graphics. Over the last few years, the city has had a net loss of 200 positions. The Water Bureau has lost 100 of those positions. So half of the net reduction in city staff has taken place in the Water Bureau. Our ad packages are designed to take back a little bit of that for some very good purposes, and I'm briefly going to go through that, and then we'll talk a little bit about the rate stabilization account and then be available for questions. The first decision package, called regulatory monitoring, that brings in-house cryptosporidium testing, which we do by contract right now. Our fear is that in the future there'll be less requirement nationwide for crypto testing. We absolutely must do crypto testing. Our variance, which protects our treatment variance, keeps us from having to build a treatment plant, depends upon it. So this is actually a wash. We will reduce contract dollars to pay for the position. The first year expense is to buy some fancy laboratory equipment so a skilled PhD biologist can actually find a crypto in the slide. This will protect our regulatory compliance effort and help us keep our treatment variance. The next decision package is community information and outreach. This is principally to increase outreach and engagement in underserved communities. We need to do a better job of that. We've hired a stellar communications director, Gabe Solner, sitting over there on my right, and we're going to put them to work doing a better job communicating with the various members of our public. The next one is infrastructure maintenance. I mentioned in the beginning that we have added $500 or $600 million worth of assets that all require maintenance. And as with new things, a lot of it is new electronic stuff that has to be taken care of. So that generates an increasing workload in the electronics and hard maintenance. We also, as a result of land use planning requirements, have inherited acres of plantings that we must maintain at these new facilities. This gives us a continuing emphasis on maintenance, which we've been making the last few years, and we really need to take care of this issue. The next decision package is information processing. This principally is in our development services arena. It's a very good thing. Business is picking up, and the city is investing in a new computer system to control that. One of the challenges with new computer systems is for them to be truly efficient. You have to feed the beast. And we need someone to feed the beast. So that's that effort. The next one is the Tabor Preservation Project. The Tabor Preservation Project is a request to the general fund. This reflects a commitment that council made to the community to continue to operate the reservoirs at Mount Tabor. Next slide looks more typical graphic. How do we compare regionally? I frankly think that the water utility presents excellent value. Locally, we cost a little bit less than Tigard or Lake Oswego and a little more than Gresham. I think that's pretty good. And the number you see up there, we don't know what others are doing with their rates, but this reflects the increased rates for Portland Water. The next slide is how do we compare with the utilities that everyone has to buy? We're among the lowest of costs in any individual's package of utilities that they typically buy. And this is the one item that's on that whole list of utilities that you literally cannot live without. Everybody must have water. So now I'll go back to Cecilia.
Okay, I'm on slide 27. This slide shows the assumptions that we used in our five-year forecast. In our financial planning, our assumptions are very conservative. We do work with the city budget office on the inflation factors that we use in our forecasting. We also work with the city debt management office on the bond rate assumptions that we use in our forecasting. Okay, next slide. Shows the rate stabilization account. Our rate stabilization account was established in 2006. Its intended use is to minimize rate increases and for unforeseen events. We have been setting funds aside since we established the account, and we have now built up our account to nearly $35 million. We only drew on the account once a couple of years ago. Our plan is to draw on the account this year, as well as through the forecast period. But we will take every opportunity to continue to set aside funds in the years that we have surplus revenue and or budget savings. And how we use the account is demonstrated in the next slide. This chart shows how we are using our rate stabilization account to smooth rate increases over the forecast period. You see the multicolor stat bar is what the forecasted rates would be if we did not use the funds from the rate stabilization account. It also shows what's driving our rate increase. You see the largest component there, I think it's orange on the paper, but it's kind of salmon tan color up on the screen, I guess. That is our capital program. So our rate impact that is needed, rate increase that's needed to fund our capital improvements. So you see in fiscal year 2017, 11.5% rate increase is what we would be asking for if we did not have the rate stabilization account available to us. Next slide. This slide shows our actual rate increases compared to what was forecasted. We have been successful in bringing our rate requests down from the forecast. Much of that is from having water revenue bonds attaining the highest credit rating that's available. And that's from good financial stewardship and strong financial management practices. Therefore, we are able to get the lowest borrowing cost that's available.
So our last slide, good value for the money. 1.8 gallons of water for a penny. And that 1 gallon of water in the market would be 89 cents to $1.59. That concludes our presentation. We're happy to answer questions.
Thanks. Good morning. Michael Harrison with the Portland Utility Board co-chair. And
Smith, yeah. Also co-chair.
We really appreciate the opportunity to be here to represent the perspective of the pub on the budget. Specifically, per our bylaws, we can only speak to things that we actually voted on. So our position today is representing the January the 29th letter that we submitted to council on the initial budget submission. But in reviewing the letter, it really remains substantive and germane to the discussion that happened today. Kendra chaired our budget subcommittee, so she'll do the bulk of talking, and then I'll have a few comments about the low-income discount program because I chaired the subcommittee on that. But since I was a two-time member of the BES budget advisory committee before there was a pub, I did want to take a moment and sort of clearly articulate the different role that we feel we have as a pub versus the more limited role of the BACs in the past, even though I think officially we're acting as a BAC today. Before, there was a lot of focus on add and cut packages, and we're doing a lot less of that as a pub, and we're really focused. We feel that we can provide the most value by being upstream of the more significant investment decisions, because that's really ultimately what will drive the infrastructure that's built, the services that are provided, and the rate at the end of the day. Kendra?
Thank you, Kendra Smith, pub co-chair. So yes, as Michael mentioned, we really did focus on upstream, the upstream aspects of the budget, recognizing that the current work has been in process for at least 5 years. So our opportunity to really influence that was pretty limited. But a couple of broad things that we, observations and suggestions that we shared in our letter included the fact that the pub is interested in being an engaged partner in the strategic planning processes. And we actually will be meeting with both bureaus in the April meeting to start to go through that, to take a look at where they see their investments needing to occur and how to deliver those services as cost effectively as possible. We also suggested that they should continue as they are, prioritizing resiliency and looking primarily at the impacts of climate change as well as earthquake vulnerability. As Michael pointed out, they put resources towards improved communication with other bureaus and their customers, which is something that was identified in the Blue Ribbon Commission. So we're pleased to see that moving forward. In a minute, I'm going to have Michael refer to the other suggestion that we had, was to continue to address affordability in a holistic and integrated manner. Specifically regarding the Water Bureau, there were three items that we identified. One was that we did not support the use of ratepayer funds to pay for historic preservation of Mount Tabor, and that's why you see the reference to the general fund regarding that. So not using ratepayer dollars, but instead using general fund dollars. The Washington Park Reservoir is obviously a very large and complex project, and we felt like that, because of the size and nature of that project, that it is important that the Water Bureau continue to provide communications and information to the public about that project. And the same thing with Willamette River Crossing, so that people understand they're building resiliency in the system, but if an earthquake, if and when an earthquake hits, we want people to have right-sized expectations regarding the infrastructure. Just because you put in a Willamette Crossing or you build another reservoir doesn't mean your water isn't going to be shut off for 3 months or more in a sizable earthquake. So being really clear with the public about that, I think, will be important. So those were some of the main items we had. I'm going to have Michael speak a little bit to the low-income discount program.
So we were asked to take a look at some previous work that had been done reviewing the city's low-income discount program for BES and for water. And I think we've met 5 times now as a subcommittee, and I sort of chaired that subcommittee. And in the letter, we felt very comfortable supporting going from the current 8,000 folks who are enrolled in that program to the budgeted 10,000. And that was primarily because there was a feeling that there were potentially some inequities between who's a part of the program and who isn't. And there's people who, for whom there are higher barriers to accessing programs. And we feel confident that the plans that have been outlined by the Bureau to go from 8 to 10,000 will really help target communities that have greater difficulty accessing programs. But one thing we did want to be very open about, because this is a very important program that has a very meaningful contribution to sort of the bottom line of housing costs for 8,000 people right now, is that a number of us on the committee also have concerns about sort of inequities that get created potentially by the program that may not be solvable, that being primarily low-income people who are in market rate housing, who there really isn't a good mechanism for providing them a subsidy because they don't receive the bill directly. It would go to the person who owns the complex, essentially the apartment complex, and we have some concerns that it would be really difficult to ensure that a subsidy directed towards that population would actually make it to that population. So as a subcommittee, we've just developed 3 ideas for how to resolve that issue potentially. And we're going to start having that discussion with the full pub at our next meeting in April. And it really ranges all the way from keeping the status quo to expanding the, and on one hand, expanding the program to managed units. But on the other hand, there's also folks on the committee who I know feel that perhaps phasing out the program altogether because of some some maybe insurmountable inequities in the program would be the way to go. So we'll definitely be communicating our recommendations to the council in the coming, probably within 3 months.
Janice Thompson, Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. So memo was distributed. I'm not going to go through every bit of it, but just to highlight what is included. The process I went through is this is actually the second kind of budget-related memo to the Water Bureau. There's a kind of a parallel memo to BES. The first memo was to inform the budget development process. And so this one is now that we see the requested budget, you know, just more details and whatnot, the information. So the 2 points that we were pleased that were in our initial set of recommendations that are reflected in the requested budget, and so the request of the City Council is to retain, relates to use of general fund dollars for historic.
Just your mic, I'm sorry.
Use of general fund dollars for the Mount Tabor historic preservation work. And a particular note in relationship to the, increasing the communications and outreach capacity. The Water Bureau's presentation and the CBO's report, you know, appropriately, and CUB supports this, focuses on serving those communities that have been historically just not adequately kept informed. But in particular, CUB sees that decision package as being important for increasing outreach on the monthly billing. So those are discussed on pages 1 and 2. Brief comments on the other decision packages, primarily on a couple points that seem just particularly important to highlight a couple of disagreements, primarily from the CBO. An observation and some questions for you to consider regarding the decorative fountain situation where there's been a request from one bureau to use ratepayer dollars. Something that I have recommended in the past, and I'm bringing it up again, is that there are a handful of Kayenta billing staff who are not housed within the Water Bureau community customer service. And well, until that's done, I'll just keep bringing it back up. So there you go. As others have mentioned, so important to focus on projects when they're just new or in early phases of CIP, so there's some discussion of that. And then finally, the Bull Run hydropower production facility is facing some challenges. And CUB was very involved in the last legislative session in the new coal transition bill, and there actually could potentially be some opportunities there which we could facilitate, you know, a conversation with some, like the Energy Trust of Oregon. So happy to go into more detail, but that's an overview of what's in the memo.
All right, good afternoon, City Council. My name is Ryan Kinsla, and I'm the analyst that works with the Water Bureau in the Budget Office. I will make my comments very, very brief, let you guys get to your discussions. And I just briefly want to touch on both rates, the capital plan, and then the Bureau's decision packages. As you guys know, the Bureau's requested a rate increase of 7% next year. This is followed by an 8.4% rate increase, an 8.3% rate increase, a 10.7% increase, and an 8.1% increase. The actual requested rates are going to differ a little bit based on the changes to the basic assumptions, the bond rates, retail demand, prior savings, the use of the rate stabilization account, and the implementation of the capital plan. The capital tends to be the primary driver of these out-year rate increases. This year's requested budget, the Bureau has asked for appropriation for the first year of the capital plan that totals $582 million over the next 5 years. That represents a $75 million increase compared to previous year's last year's capital plan, and that is primarily based on increases to the Washington Park project. The several new capital projects also include in that capital plan, a needle valve replacement up at Bull Run, a microwave communication system, and several main and distribution upgrades. This, again, notes sort of the reoccurring question that comes to council every year, and that is whether the risk and the needs of the assumed five-year financial plan align with the public's needs and their expectations. The Bureau has requested 5 decision packages. 4 of these are primarily operational. They total 10.5 FTE. As Director Sturr went through, these are in the Cryptosporidium Lab, community information outreach positions, the hydraulic network, horticulturist, an electrician in a security position, and a records analyst position in 2 positions in the permitting function for the Water Bureau. The Budget Office has recommended all these positions except for one of them, and have found that there's sufficient business case and urgency that warrants the addition of these positions. We also note that there's periodically additional operational and maintenance positions that are needed as a system adopts to the needs of the community and as capital projects are completed. Lastly, we have also recommended for the Tabor Preservation Project for $750,000. That's part of a $4 million request that's going to be going over the next 4 years because council has already committed to that previously. That's all of the comments I had, but I'd be happy to answer questions about the budget analysis.
Okay. Well, what was the one package you didn't recommend?
We didn't recommend for the records analyst position.
So on the cryptosporidium monitoring, you're talking about using the BES water quality lab, is that correct?
No, sir. We're planning on bringing that in-house into our lab.
You have your own lab?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We have a fairly large lab in the operations building.
Okay.
So I'm worried about the projected 10.7% increase in 2020. And looking at rates going up again and wondering when the next recession is going to be and if that's going to be right when people are starting to hurt even more. Obviously, and then the rate stabilization fund you're appropriately using to make it even not even harsher. Yeah, and then the practice of continuing to borrow and then have debt service as well. And so it's just something to consider, Council, as to whether if there is the Saltzman bump in the one-time money, there might be some value in putting more money into paying for stuff as we go. Because as we've noted on various different things with the city and other governments, the citizens don't necessarily understand the difference between the rate bureaus and the general fund bureaus. They're interested in what their total cost of living is, and that seems to be looming. So I don't have a proposed solution. I just have a concern. I do have a concern on page 24 where the Bureau lists that the ongoing costs of the Tabor Preservation project will be $4 million, and then looking at the CUB letter saying that absolutely this should be general fund. I appreciate City Budget Office's analysis that, in fact, part there is an additional money for an interpretive system that is not in anybody's projections yet, and yet that was a condition of approval of the land use. Now, when there are, I forget what we did in terms of having the two separate ordinances and resolutions when we got to agreement on what should happen to the Tabor reservoirs, but in my mind, they were definitely linked to getting approval of the conversion and in requirement to the LT2 and moving to underground storage, to what we did with the historic preservation. So in other land use issues, developers don't get to say, well, I'm not going to do this particular part of it because it's not related to my project. If it's a condition of approval, it's a condition of approval. So I know we're not making that decision. Well, I'm going to state categorically, we are not making that decision now as to how that $4 million is going to be funded ongoing. We can't bind future councils. I believe that there's absolutely a good case to be made that it should be rate funded. And that, again, would then tie into how much do the rates go up. Just wanted to make that point.
Commissioner, if I could just make one comment, because you raise an excellent point, and I'm going to refer to slides 27 and slide 30. So you have identified in 2020, year 2020 on slide 27, the rate forecast is 10.7. So for example, last year, the rate forecast was 14.1%. Thanks to, and we've had this ongoing discussion with the CBO, because I think of all the bureaus, water probably uses the most conservative forecasting things. And what happens is people, a couple years ago in the water district fight, people took the big scary forecast number, multiplied it, and said, oh my God. So I want to give you an example, because we share the your concern about rates. In 14-15, the forecast was 14%. The actual rate was 7. When you combine that with the fact that the Bureau of Environmental Services is on a slight glide path down because of, and you'll learn more about that in their presentation, the combined rate impact was able to come in well below 5%. We think, and again, I don't want to make a promise I can't keep, and who knows, I might not even be on the council, but the expectation is that if the forecast is 10.7 in 2020, the actual could be quite a bit below that. I'm not saying it'll be 5, using the 50% below we had last year, but if interest rates stay low, if we continue to have our AAA credit rating, if we continue to make other tough choices, we'll bring that down quite a bit. And then what you'll be asking is, because you will be on the council then, you will be asking, is the combined rate increase under 5%? And that is the target, and I think you'll be pleased with the answer.
Well, down on that, I agree. And that has been our experience. And, you know, one could argue that our economist should be more sanguine in his overall forecasts, and one could argue that the Water Bureau should be less conservative in their forecasts, but it serves us pretty well that we start in a conservative place and edge towards a more realistic one rather than edging back towards reality from overspending. So I'm okay with that discipline. And then secondly, if you look at what's happened to the workforce, which is smaller, so less people are doing more work with thanks to efficiency, and your capital program is not actually going to increase over the next 3 years, and that's the big driver. So I'm pretty sanguine about that. That I think it would be strange for us to actually hit that forecast under these conditions. Less people on the payroll and a slightly smaller capital program.
And I'm assuming that's something that the Port and Utility Board will be looking at very closely. So I'm just raising it as a concern.
Other questions, comments, Rita?
As usual, I sent quite a list to the Water Department because I'm still trying to understand how all the bureaus work. But some of the other questions I had, one had to do with the Washington Park project. When I read in here, the current estimate was what, triple what the original estimate was? Was that project scope changed dramatically to make that happen?
The site itself, I spent well over an hour explaining what exactly happened to that to council. It was really kind of an interesting presentation. Is we're building at an extremely difficult site. And I think the best way to think about it is we're building two facilities. We're building a tank, which is really quite simple with some pipes coming in and out of it. And then we're building this facility to make it seismically and landslide proof. So you end up with a project that, honestly, costs more than we thought that it did. I think the number that we have right now is better than pretty good. We have drilled probably 10 times the number of holes that you usually drill to study a normal site, and we've had the site analyzed by experts. But I think that our initial estimate was, it's kind of one of the problems in capital budgeting. You have to be an optimist to be in the capital construction business, and it was too optimistic.
Frieda, can I just make one other point? The original estimate, as Mike said, assumed one project. When the engineering study came back and said that it's a very unstable area, what Mike and his team did is they decided to build a fortress around it in order to protect it. And that roughly doubled the cost. And the alternative that was laid out to the council would have been to acquire a whole swath of a very tony neighborhood up in that zip code and build it in more stable ground. The problem is it would be more expensive to acquire Arlington Heights for that purpose than to build a fortress around the tank. But it did. The scope of the project literally doubled once the engineering work came back and the survey work came back and said it's so unstable, unless you build a fortress around the tank, it won't hold up. So you're right in identifying that issue.
Well, I can understand that. Douglas had a similar thing with its swimming pool and had to go from fixing it to building a new one. So those things do happen. That's why I was asking if the scope changed, because I know that can happen, especially with projects such as this that you're dealing with the environment. I was just curious on one of the things you hear out in East Portland, because that's where I'm from, is the water rates are too high. In fact, I just talked to someone and said he was moving to Gresham because they were less expensive. Of course, I understood he didn't. You know, it's a three-month bill you get, and so it looks when I get a bill that's almost $400 because it's got the sewer, stormwater, you kind of go into shock. Is there some way to, I don't know, put on the bill, something that breaks it down more into months that makes people realize it's not that huge amount they think it is? Because I think that's where people are looking at it wrong, is they're not understanding that this is a three-month bill, you know?
Frieda, I just want to say we did not put you up to that question. Am I
no.
right? Okay.
I'm expressing East Portland here.
And as delighted as we were with the question, the mayor seems positively ecstatic. So first of all, to your friends who are moving to Gresham, I guess we want to give them a chance to reconsider, because they'll pay the same for their water bill that they pay here. And the common misperception, as you've said, is that people look at their quarterly bill and they go, oh my goodness, well, it's 3 months, not one. And the second thing they do is some of our customers understand that with the bill they get is only one-third water, two-thirds sewer, stormwater. Water, as chart 25 shows, is a pretty good value in the region. Sewer stormwater is more expensive because we're ahead of the curve nationally in completing our big pipe. And cities across the country are going to have to do a big pipe when it's more expensive to do it and harder. But we spent $1.4 billion of ratepayer dollars to cure that problem. So your water sewer rates are a little higher, and that's what people sometimes confuse. But I will tell you, the solution is to getting people on monthly billing. And every time I see Mayor Hales, he says, how's your family? How you doing? How can I help? And then he says, and how are we doing on monthly billing? Because, A, he wants us to get as many people on monthly billing for all the right reasons. But, B, if you get a monthly bill, you can compare apples to apples, because the rest of our bills are monthly. And we think that if people get that monthly bill, which they can do electronically or paper, then they have a better sense of the relative cost of their public utilities. And it gives them more options in how to finance those costs. So we agree with you 100%, and we will continue to try to do a better job explaining to people what they're actually paying for.
Is there an incentive for me to go on?
Yes. Yes, I will put you on my Christmas card list. We will give you more notices, and if you do that, you can also get a monthly bill, a reminder from Kathy if you don't pay it. And you can have an easy way of paying it online that's almost...
There's no financial...
No, but if you need one, you're a budget member, we'll consider it. But no, we don't have a formal one, but you are saving a lot of paper, so you'll feel better.
I'd rather be on your Christmas gift.
If I could interrupt and make one more introduction, we like to have our labor partners here, and our COPIA representative just came in, Amy Bowles. Back there. Thank you.
I do have a couple more. I get right into the nitty-gritty of things because I used to basically run the administrative end of a small company, so I dealt with everything to do with finance. And I noticed in your budget you were showing that bank card fees went up quite a bit. So I was curious how often you go out to bid on those services, because I know it depends on how much people are using it, et cetera, on what your rate you get, and it gets pretty competitive.
So fortunately, we have our honest-to-goodness customer service expert here who's an ace at this, and Kathy will answer.
Well, by being an ace at this, I will tell you that the city treasury actually does the controls what bank we use and what credit card system we use, and they just went out 3 years ago. That's off the top of my head. So really recently, we do get, because we're a government agency, we do get a government rate for those who do use Visa and MasterCard. And it's one of the reasons why we hadn't expanded to things like Discover and American Express, because they don't give the same benefit. So we do look for those kinds of things to keep the cost down.
And one other question, kind of similar, is go even especially monthly with electronic. Are you talking, when you say electronic paying by Visa, or are you talking when I do bill pay online, because I pay you guys online?
We appreciate it.
It ends up being a check, because I don't think you're an e-bill setup where you get ACH'd the funds or EFT the funds.
Well, when you sign up with your own personal bank to have them do an automatic check to us, that does happen electronically, and we just upload that to Wells Fargo, so we have that. You can pay by ACH or by credit card online. You can pay by ACH and credit card over the phone, and pretty soon we will have an auto pay program for you so that you don't even have to think about it.
No.
So let me follow up on that. I pay online, but I pay through my financial institution. Does that financial institution write you a check and send it to you, or do they ACH that to your account?
It depends on the financial institution. Some larger ones have the ability to send us an electronic file, so we don't have to receive a paper. Smaller ones, like perhaps credit unions, we will actually get a check.
So in some cases, for you, the work is the same. Whether it's, to me, it's electronic, but to you, it's the same as me writing you a check, sending it in the mail. If my bank sends you a check, because you've got to process it, right?
Your bank has better handwriting than you do? Yes.
and they pay the overdraft.
That's right. In some cases, that is true. But, it's the technology has moved so much that there's not a lot of places that still have to send a check like that.
Okay, good.
Of the pub, you were talking about the program for low income, basically it is this subsidized program. How because the majority of those people are living in East Portland right now, and a large portion are renters who, it sounds like, can't access this, that inequity you talked about. How much are you, when you start studying the options, how much are you going to bring the representatives from those communities, especially the renters, in to discuss? Because I feel it's really important. I'm hearing, anecdotal things, about how management firms are finding different ways to charge the renter than just saying a rent increase, like now you're going to pay this much toward water, even though they're getting the bill. So we're seeing more of that happening out in East Portland, and of course it makes it even more difficult for them.
Sure. Well, we're, even though the subcommittee's talked quite a bit, the full pub's only sort of briefly discussed the issue, so I don't want to get ahead of the full pub, because I honestly don't know what direction that they'll go. Certainly, all of our subcommittee meetings are open to the public, and the League of Women Voters is particularly attentive and participates in all those, and has been sort of a good sounding body to discuss some of these issues. But presumably, if we were to recommend something dramatic, we would need to do, I think, more significant outreach. From the very beginning, the pub has talked quite a bit about it, having a desire to spend more time out in the community. We've spent so much time trying to gear up as a committee and get our bylaws together and our rules together and submit the budget letter in time that we haven't been able to sort of do that so far. But I don't think anybody on the committee would want to recommend something really dramatic without actually being sort of out in the community and listening to people, if that makes sense. But we don't have a specific plan as of this time.
Just a suggestion, because being out there is, most of those people will not come into downtown Portland, that when you go to discuss that, you should be out there where the majority of them live to get their input and make sure you have interpretation so that you can get a full, the information fully, because East Portland Action Plan would help you get the word out, but you have to be out there with this.
Frieda, just one thing for think about, and this is for a further discussion, but if we were to consider a change in our building code to require single meters for individual metering in multifamily buildings, which some cities are looking at because the technology is changing, then we would be able to deliver the discount to more people. The principal barrier right now is that our system works off a meter, off of usage. It's not an entitlement program that you get just because you're otherwise income eligible. And if we can figure out a way to require, in a cost-effective way, individual metering in new multifamily construction, we'll have a better way of delivering the discount to people who are in apartment buildings rather than single-family homes.
Could we maybe look at some kind of a flat rebate system that obviously everybody uses water. Maybe we wouldn't know exactly how much water everybody was using, but we could at least give folks who are eligible a little bit back.
It's a wonderful idea, and in the low-income discount study group that gave us the report we gave to PUB, that was an issue they flagged. And also, Commissioner Fritz, by working with trusted partners, for example, Home Forward and Section 8 voucher holder, we have been able to get around some of the problems, but one option that we need to consider is whether to do a flat fee and just make some assumptions about usage. It doesn't correlate to usage, which has been our basic operating system, but it would give us the ability to get more money out the door to people that need the discount. So we'll come back to you with some ideas on that.
And Director Sturr, I know that they're outside your peripheral vision, but you have also the representatives from Laborers 483 here, Wesley Buchholz. I don't know if they were acknowledged. They're kind of behind there.
Thank you. Appreciate the desire to do improved outreach and community engagement information flow. The two positions that you've asked for and that CBO recommended, the dollar amount, is that for specifically for salary and benefits? And if so, where is the money for translation, for translation of world water notices and other important information like that? Where is that if it's not within this dollar amount?
The item in the budget is for staff, and we don't have a problem funding those other activities. It's small, actually.
So speaks the rate-funded bureau compared with the general fund bureaus, right? Yeah. So what you're saying is that you will be able to fund the...
Absolutely. It's not large. Thank you all for hearing us.
Let's start your play over here. Yep. It's warmer here, though. Thank goodness it was cold.